This is 20 Minutes for Tech, episode 18, Conestoga Valley High School Chats with Daniel Pink. Welcome to another edition of 20 Minutes for Tech, your technology integration podcast. I'm your host, Dave Solon, and I'd like to first apologize for the long delay in episodes. Even though we released three podcasts back in August, it's been over a month now. Sorry for that. But this one may just be worth waiting for, as it stars a group of high school students from Conestoga Valley High School in a Skype chat with Daniel Pink. Sort of a follow-up to the interview I had with Dan last episode. I've taken bits of an hour-long chat and honed it down to around 20 minutes to complement Dan's interview. So without further ado, here's best-selling author Dan Pink talking with CV students about concepts from A Whole New Mind and Johnny Bunko. Take it away, Dan.
One reason that I wanted to make sure that this book was, you could read it in an hour, is that today I think that writers get the first word, but as this conversation demonstrates, we don't get the last word. And I think that the books that really succeed and the way that people really learn is through conversations. And so the goal on this one is to say, hey, let's give people a fun, fast read, but then let's have it trigger conversations. Conversations with your friends, conversations with your parents, conversations with your teachers, because that's where the real learning takes place. And so this little book, thin little book, much thinner than my previous books, the goal is really to spark a conversation. So that's why I did what I did, and I'm curious to hear your actions to it, because as I said, I might get the first word, but I sure as heck don't get the last word.
All right, Mr. Pink, I'm going to ask the first question just because that is going to get them ready, because I'm going to go around and touch them and have them ask you questions. But yeah, A Whole New Mind, do you think you could transform that into a comic book form? I could possibly get my husband to read it if you could do that.
maybe. I think it would be pretty hard. But not impossible. I think it'd be hard because that book is really making an argument, and there's less of a story, and there aren't characters. Whereas this is just what you have here is you have in Johnny Bunko, you have characters who get into a strange situation and complications ensue. Typical kind of story. Whereas Only Mind is much more of a kind of an argument, but there are probably ways that we could do it. If any of you guys have ideas, maybe I'll hire you.
Hi, Mr. Pink. My name's Andrew Kilgore. I was just wondering, how should we prepare for a career when we're going through an educational system that focuses so heavily on left brain thinking, when we're going to be going into the workforce and having to be like using our right brain thinking even more?
Yeah, I want to make something really clear. I mean, this left brain stuff is very, very important. You have to have these left brain abilities. If you have only right brain abilities and no left brain abilities, you are going to be in a world of hurt. However, if you have only the left brain abilities and no right brain abilities, I actually think you're going to struggle. And so, what I really think is, I think we sometimes put too much of the responsibility on schools to do all these things. I think a lot of the responsibility is on the individual. I mean, you're a smart kid, so you can figure out, hey, I need to know these things. So that's going to affect, say, what you do out of high school, what other kind of learning that you do in the rest of your life. And so, I don't think we should say, ooh, schools are too left-brain, therefore we can never learn these right-brain things. I think that we need to make some changes in schools, and I think a lot of schools are doing... Teachers around this country and principals and superintendents around this country are really doing heroic work. The structure of your schools is not, believe me, is not fully under the control of your teachers and principals and superintendents. They are, the school policies, the education policies are dictated from state capitals and from Washington, D.C. There's very little autonomy in the system. And so, as I look at schools and what teachers and principals and superintendents are able to do, I'm really in awe that they're able to get so much done in a system as messed up as this. So I think, you know, learn the left brain things, but put it, you know, the onus is on yourself to try to build these kinds of right brain capacities, whether it's in extracurricular activities, whether it's in what you do after college, and recognize that it's not the kind of thing where it's not like the multiplication tables, where once you know the multiplication tables, you know it. These are things that it's more like sports or more like music, where you're always trying to get better at them. You're never going to be as good as you can be. You're always moving towards sort of greater and greater capacity. And so, but I think simply sort of having that frame as you go in and taking the responsibility on your own in terms of what you choose to do extracurricularly, what you choose to do after college, how you continue to learn as an adult is really what can determine a lot of it.
Okay, Mr. Pink, my question is, what type of job that uses right brain thinking do you think will become the most needed in the future?
Well, that's a good question, and you know, my real answer is, I'm going to shift here a little bit, if you don't mind. My back is hurting. My real answer is, I don't know. I think it's very dangerous to. You guys can still see me here, right? Yeah. I needed to sit back in that chair a little bit. I don't know. I think it's very dangerous to make those kinds of predictions. Let me give you an example of this. Okay, the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the beginning of the 1980s, Bureau of Labor Statistics does these projections of what are going to be the jobs of the decade. And so in the early 1980s, they said, we're going to have, you probably haven't even heard this term before, we're going to have a lot of jobs for data entry clerks. Because what they said is, they said, these computers are getting more powerful, and we're going to need people to enter all the data. We're going to have massive jobs for data entry clerks. What they didn't realize is that that computers, yes, indeed, would be ubiquitous, but that we would end up doing our own data entry. And so there weren't any jobs for data entry clerks. So they completely, you know, they completely missed that. Let's go to the early 1990s. The early 1990s, probably around the time that all of you were born. In the early 1990s, the folks at Bureau of Labor Statistics looked at the aging of the baby boom, looked at the deregulation of travel, and said, wow, people are going to be traveling a lot more. We're going to need huge numbers of travel agents. What they didn't see was Orbitz, Expedia, all these other things. And so it's very, very difficult to say with any certainty what jobs, you know, you should do. That's another reason why, as Johnny says, learns in lesson one, why planning is in some ways a little bit shaky, because you just don't know for sure. There were plenty of people who thought, you know, who last month had a plan, and the plan was working for Lehman Brothers, which is now gone. The plan was working for AIG, which is now owned by the government. So the most important thing is to think about as you sort of navigate these things, is not try to game the system. Say, what am I good at? What do I do? What do I like doing? And try to focus as much of your effort on that, and just be nimble enough to figure out how to make a living on that. Now, this is not easy. This is not easy, but it's better advice than saying, prepare for this job, when in fact, whatever job I'm talking about might not exist in 5 years, might not exist in 10 years. A great example would be, let's say we had this conversation 10 years ago, 1998, and I would, you know, I said, and I was able to look into my future. I would say, oh, you know what you should do? I'm sorry, I forgot your first name. Oh, Alexander. Alexander. If I said to you, you know what, Alexander, in 10 years we're going to have a lot of jobs for search engine optimizers. I mean, you would never even heard what the heck's a search engine optimizer. So the truth is that we just don't know. My guess is that, let's say 20 years from now, when you're in your all of you are in your mid-30s, many of you, if not the majority of you, are going to be working in industries that don't exist right now, and we'll be doing, have job titles for which we don't have the vocabulary yet. So, you know, so again, if you just go to the big picture here, focus on what you're good at, do it persistently, and of course, try to do work that's hard to outsource and hard to automate.
Okay, hi, Mr. Pink. Why are these business changes in Asia happening all of a sudden?
Oh, it's a good question. Why are they happening all of a sudden? A couple of reasons. It's a really, really good question, actually. One reason is technology. It used to be that if you wanted to have, let's say that you're making tennis shoes, and you're a tennis shoe company, and you want to have your tennis shoes actually made in India or China, and think about what that requires. You have to have a factory in China. You have to have people to work there to do the sewing, to do the stitching, to do the stamping. And so let's say the people in China who work at the factory, you have to have somebody run the factory, manage the factory. You have to buy that factory. You have to you had all these people to organize, and then so when they finally organize all the people, they start making these tennis shoes, and the tennis shoes, are this big, and you got to put them in boxes, and then you got to get them to the United States. So you got to put them all in cargo containers, and then you got to put them all in a giant boat, and then you put them all in the boat. The boat has to sail across the ocean. The boat has to then get to a dock. You need someone to unload all the stuff. Then you've got to put it on trucks and send it out to the store. I mean, it's a serious, serious undertaking. And so it took a while to get trade, ever more efficient, so that could get done relatively quickly. Now, think about so that's how let's say you make tennis shoes in China and export it to the United States. Now, let me show you how, if you're doing computer programming, you export computer programming. Okay, so here's my computer, my other computer here in the office. Oops, I'm on iTunes. Bear with me. So let's say here's how I export something. Here's how I export software from India to the United States. Watch this. Click, 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 and it's there. Now, which is easier? Which is faster? And so once you have the capacity to do that, it just takes off. It takes off like lightning. So it's a really excellent question, and it's one actually that our politicians haven't been asking enough. And I'm glad. Oh, that's a little bit better. And so, so it's a really excellent question. That's one reason that it took off. And then once it takes off, there's a multiplier effect that goes on, so that it gets faster and faster and faster. And so, I think your question is a really, really good question that really hits at a lot of the reason people have anxiety about this sort of stuff, because it happened very, very quickly. And if you think about these different eras in the economy, all right, so you had the agriculture economy lasted about this long, okay, and so that was replaced by the industrial economy. Well, the industrial economy lasted about this long, and that was replaced by the information economy. Well, the information economy lasted about this long. And so things are just moving at such a pace that I think it's a really, really good insight into why people are slightly wigged out about what's going on, because it's happening so, so, so quickly. And I think the main reason it's happening so quickly is that difference that I tried to illustrate there between exporting sneakers and exporting computer code.
Okay, as I walk around the bins, I want to ask you, are you a PC or a Mac guy?
Oh, it's a full Mac environment here at Thinking World Headquarters. Now the curious thing about that is that I'll tell you, the first computer that I used was in 1984. Actually, the second computer that I used, the first computer I used a lot was in 1984 when the Mac first came out. I went to college carrying an electric typewriter. I had this giant electric typewriter, and so my first 2 years of college, I did basically all my writing on electric typewriter. Then the Mac came out in 1984, and I thought, oh my God, this is like the greatest thing that I've ever seen. And I went to show my daughter that one of the first Macs, and that first Mac had 512K of memory. I mean, think about that. I've got a memory stick here, okay? This memory stick has way, way more than 512K, so it's just remarkable. But I'm a long time Mac user.
All right, so America is switching its focus to right-brain thinking because the rest of the world is switching its focus to left-brain thinking and can do it cheaper than we can, right? What happens when the rest of the world adopts right-brain thinking?
Excellent point. Excellent question. I think that it's merely... well, there are two different ways to go on that. One is that is to use Tom Friedman's phrase, they could race us to the bottom or they could race us to the top. I think generally that economies have largely been races to the top. And so if you look at the six abilities, let's think about the six abilities. I think the design is possible to get picked off. I think it's possible that design can get picked off, or certain aspects of design can get picked off. I think that symphony, big picture thinking, is very, very hard to outsource. I'm not saying that people overseas, people in India and elsewhere can't do that, but I think it's very hard to ship overseas in the way that we ship routine left-brain work. I think empathy, which is becoming a very, very important part of all kinds of jobs, not only in healthcare, but also in sales, in customer service, in a whole range of professions, empathy is very hard to outsource. So I think that, you know, empathy ends up becoming even more and more important. I think that the advantage we have in this country isn't that sort of Americans are somehow innately better at any of this stuff at the biological level. I think the advantage we have in this country is that we have fairly, our laws and institutions are pretty good at fostering this kind of stuff. In other countries, if you make a mistake in business, you've shamed your whole family and never have a second chance. In other countries don't have the respect for property rights that we have. Other countries don't have pure freedom of doing contracts. Some countries, China for one, doesn't have full free expression. So if you say something the government doesn't want, you could get in trouble. And I think it's very hard to be fully right-brained when there isn't free expression. And so the United States, no way, no how, doesn't have a permanent lock on these kinds of abilities. But I think we have certain kinds of advantages for now that if we use them and really work at it, we can get better. The other thing to keep in mind, and it's another excellent question is that you raised, is the way we think about economies too. You can have, economists will talk about things that are zero sum and positive sum. Zero sum and positive sum. And so if you think about something that is zero sum means that if I win, you lose. Okay, so let's say, so it's sort of like Texas Hold'em poker. All right, there's a certain amount of chips in there, and every chip that I get is one chip that you don't get. That's a zero sum game. But economies are not zero sum games. They're what economists call positive sum games. And so it's possible for both of us to move up. And so the fact that a country like India is getting better, is getting more prosperous, doesn't make the United States worse off. In fact, arguably, it makes the United States better off. So I think, I think our politicians do a pretty bad job of explaining that to people. So I think that's something else to keep in mind as we think about the pressures that other countries are putting on smart, young people like you.
Before I give it to another student, I want to ask you, what book are you working on next?
I'm working on a book about the science and economics of motivation and why we do what we do, and how certain kinds of rewards, like external rewards, sometimes diminish performance rather than enhance it, and that understanding what it is you're intrinsically motivated to do is really important in leading a productive, happy life.
All right, so thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
So there you have it. Technology allowing a best-selling author to chat with students at school. CVs was a simple but extremely effective setup. One computer up front took care of the video Skype chat with Dan. Dan simply used his MacBook with built-in camera to connect back with the students. One last thing. This conversation was recorded on Ustream, so if you'd like to go check out the whole thing, simply go to www.ustream.com/channel/CVSD, Charlie, Victor, Sally, David, and click on the link. While you're there, check out some of the other cool things that they have saved in their archives. I know the list is growing at CV. Thanks again for listening. This has been 20 Minutes for Tech, your technology integration podcast. See you next time.